Good luck.
Welcome, everyone, to Rock'em Nation Podcast. This is a brand new episode, brand new season, brand new intro music. That was the Beat Nuts. For those unaware, I believe that was 1994. And Props Over Here is the name of the track. If you want to look it up, download it, listen to it, stream it, whatever you want to do. That's who we're going to rock with for the next full season. Season 6. Episode 1, and it's all about your Missouri Tigers. I'm your host, Sam Snelling. With me from the plains of Indiana, Matthew J. Harris. Matt, how are you?
I'm fine. It was a nice respite that we took for a couple of weeks. And while we were away, apparently everyone decided to chop lists and commit and bestow us with enough material to talk about as we open Season 6. So praise be to the recruiting gods for giving us material.
Well, we did kind of think that there might be some movement on one of the top remaining targets as far as maybe setting a date for a visit, something along those lines. That has still not been announced, whether or not it's been coordinated or not. It would be, I guess, unbeknownst to us. But Chris Parker, I think, is the guy that everyone sort of is eyeing, and we've been eyeing as somebody who is probably the top uncommitted guard that Missouri is hot on the trails after. And so I guess, Matt, first of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about Mr. Parker?
Out of Quincy, Florida, he's a 6'6", 170-pound combo guard. Plays at a small, I think, charter school there called Crossroads Academy. Quincy's about 30 minutes to the west of Tallahassee, so just as you start to get into the panhandle of Florida. Had been recruited, obviously, by Charlton Young for a long, long time. He and Anthony R. Robinson II are probably two guys that there's been a longstanding relationship with back when CY was hired, and you went and looked at On3's recruiting prediction. It gave overwhelming odds to Florida State to land Parker. A guy who a lot of people thought a year ago might push for five-star status, really, really high-level athlete, long, rangy, great burst. You know, you look at him and you just think, yeah, that looks like a Florida State guard. Skinny, but not like, you know, lean, but not skinny. You know, he's muscular, but he can still take some weight. Really, really good first and second jump. The question for him is going to be, can he put all those tools together efficiently? He can create pull-ups. He can get to jumpers. He can get to the rim. But the knock on Parker has always sort of been, is he making the right decisions? Is his shot selection good enough? You know, he's a guy who can create a little bit for you, you know, off a ball reversal. But is he moving the ball to the right spot? So he was kind of a guy who's in that 40 to 60 range in the composite, and he's not really moved from there. And you know, he's a guy that I think sort of fits, you know, with what we've talked about several times, which is the physical template is there. And this staff, Dennis Gates and you know, CY, when they're at Florida State, this is what they made their bones on, finding guards who were like 6'6 to 6'9, who were long and sort of agile, and getting them in the gym and polishing up their skill set. Parker's listed as a combo guard, but I think you could slot him at any one of the three guard spots depending. No, I don't think you'd want him running the point for a long stretch, but he can do it. You know, he can play as a wing defensively. He can spot up and space out if he needs to, but I really feel like he's kind of that, you know, new combo guard that we see. Just a bigger physical profile to do that. Would be a guy that I don't know if you say year one he's going to come in and, you know, make a dent, but he's a guy that, you know, if you get him on campus, he definitely fits with kind of, I think, the physical profile that this staff is trying to move towards.
Yeah, so I think, I can't remember if we talked about him in the last podcast, but it was certainly like right around then. And I wrote about him a little bit. It seems to be that the momentum is there on Missouri's side. You know, when you look at like the other schools been recruiting him, it all kind of looks like they've taken some level of prospect at that sort of combo guard position. Doesn't necessarily mean that, like, you know, schools won't take two, because I don't think you can ever have enough guys who can handle the ball,
nope.
Particularly, you know, 6'6" athletes. You know, and what's funny is, you know, in our Slack channel, you know, we constantly refer to Parker, and for the longest time it was Parker Friedrichsen. And now it's sort of pivoted to, you know, Parker being the last name, and that's Chris Parker. So we could pretty much, like, stay consistent with, you know, being excited about a prospect with the name Parker. But it does look like Friedrichsen is at least moving elsewhere.
Yeah, we'll get to the traffic report in a minute, for lack of a better term. We heard probably around the beginning of August that this was looking like a possibility here. Parker, you know, had moved grassroots teams at the end, you know, midway through the July period. He left Team Breakdown, which plays on the Under Armour circuit, to go play at Peach Jam with Knight Riders, which is a Miami-based program. Real close connections to CY again. And put together a couple nice games. CY was there for a couple of them. We were told that, like, Gates was there for one, but maybe the game that he was at wasn't one that I was able to stream in. But a guy who had some stretches where he played well. I thought his shot selection was pretty good some of the time, except for the back end of the week. He had a couple of clunkers in there. But you can definitely see, you know, what the allure there is. If the kid can put everything together, you know, if he gets a little more arc on the jumper, if, you know, he gets a little bit more strength around the rim and, you know, can, you know, add some finishing craft, you know, to the mix. But, you know, the kid rebounds insanely well for his position, his size and his physical build. You know, he can switch, he can play on the ball, off the ball. You know, he's, you know, despite 6'6", he's got great bounce, so he can even be a guy who you could have, you know, help down and block shots. There's enough tools there to where you go, if we get this kid in a gym and he's committed and he's focused, we can get a really good player out of him. And, you know, I think the one thing that Missouri did with the first two pickups was, you can look at Anthony Robinson and Trent Pierce and you can say there's a clear tool with each of those guys. Because Trent Pierce, it's the jumper. With Anthony Robinson, it's, you know, on the ball defense, so the ability to make good, simple decisions as a passer. With Parker, and maybe kind of the rest of the guys we're going to talk about, you're making more of an upside play based off their physical attributes and their athleticism. So I think that's kind of where the board has pivoted now is, you know, you're starting to kind of, I think, do what we talk about, which is get SEC athletes and turn them into a basketball player. So I think Parker's kind of in that side of the Venn diagram, for lack of a better term, or lack of a better description.
And certainly, like, if you're talking about, you know, how this team is taking shape, you know, Gates's first real recruiting class is, you know, like, we've talked about how, like, you don't really necessarily want to judge a guy on his first official class, because you're not really, in a lot of cases, getting to build the level of relationships. It looks like they're going to benefit, at least with, you know, Robinson, you know, and CY kind of having that longstanding relationship for, you know, for being in Tallahassee. If they end up getting Parker, then it's kind of the same thing. They're really going to benefit. Like, this is why you pay, you know, CY as much money as you do, is because, you know, he's got the relationships. He can step in right away and start landing guys. And so
yeah, and
if you kind of look at, like, the, like, Parker in addition to, like, Trent Pierce and Anthony Robinson, like, that's a really pretty solid start.
It's top 25 class
in his recruiting. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, maybe some years it's closer to 30, but for walking in the door and, you know, grabbing a class at, you know, if it's three dudes and, you know, the individual recruiting rank among all of them will probably be better than anything Missouri's had in the last decade. Even if you include the 17 class, you know, on an average per recruit basis, this would be the best class they've had in about a decade. So there's a real possibility here that there's going to be some quality here, even if it doesn't necessarily result in a really high recruiting ranking. And same thing sort of applies to Jordan Butler. That's a guy whose older brother John was recruited by CY to Florida State, and now they're going to try and go back in again, and probably from a positional need is really the best crack they've got at getting a big this fall. So presumably, I mean, if they can get Butler on campus and close him, that's three CY guys that, you know, he will have had more than 2 years recruiting under his belt with. And that, again, that's, you know, when we talked about after, you know, Konza's dismissal, if you're going to build this program right, you have to invest in guys who can set you up to close. And if they can get Butler and Parker, you know, I don't know what the odds of that are, but if they can do that, that's a top 15 recruiting class, you know, less than 6 months after those guys came on board. That is a phenomenal, phenomenal, you know, performance for this staff right out of the chute. And with some really, really nice 2024 prospects set to arrive in October for official visits. So I don't know what my confidence level should be on Butler. You know, there's no visit date set there, but there's an opportunity potentially to really, really close out the 23 cycle with a bang if they can get Parker and Butler on campus. We'll see if that happens, though.
Yeah, that'd be a four-man class that, you know, we really haven't seen probably since, you know, what?
The average recruit rating would be 0.9528. That's higher than the 2017 class and higher than Haith's best class. It would be the best class in at least a decade on a per recruit average, like on an average recruit rating basis.
Yeah, I got to think that, you know, there was probably, you know, maybe like the Ricky Paulding and Arthur Johnson class.
Yeah,
like,
somewhere
I'm thinking
in there,
you got to
yeah.
go back to like Quinn Snyder to.
Yeah, yeah, it would be that long ago. And so there's an opportunity here to really make a quick dent. And the nice part about this is you will have grabbed a point guard. You will have grabbed a combo guard. You will have grabbed a wing and you will have grabbed a post. And if you consider Aiden Shaw kind of that modern hybrid 3-4 guy, the last two cycles will have yielded you potentially a starting five that is at least with an average recruiting rating that's probably within the top 75 of the composite. Suddenly, the question of talent has been solved, at least in the short term.
Yeah,
but that's what you got to do. You know, if you're going to make a push, you know, there's an opportunity in this league to move up in the next, you know, 18 months to 2 years. If this staff, again, hypothetically, if they can do this, they will have covered a lot of ground really quickly in terms of getting this roster into a position that can take advantage of that window.
So 2023 as it, you know, is wrapping up, you know, and I guess we should probably maybe run through all the guys who you've marked off. So anyone kind of keeping track at home can, you know, disregard, if you follow Matt on Twitter, I have not been doing a lot of Twitter stuff lately. As the football season is ramping up, this is a little behind the scenes, we are trying to add a second beat writer, and coordinate football coverage. So my attention for Twitter has been not what it usually is.
Which is probably healthy for you, which is probably healthy. Yeah. Healthier.
But if you follow that at Matt J. Harris 85 guy, you will probably be up on, you know, where the board stands. If you don't and you just listen to the podcast, we're here to walk you through it. So, Matt, we mentioned Parker Fredrickson earlier. He was a guy that we sort of focused a lot on in the spring. You and I both like him as a prospect. He's a high-level shooter. He's a wily, skinny kid out of Oklahoma. But it does look like Missouri is out of the picture there.
Yeah. So since July 23rd, which is when the last pod dropped, 8 players holding Missouri offers have committed. There were 30 offers total in this class. There are 2 Missouri commits. That leaves 28 possible names. Basically, a quarter of those have come off the board in the last couple of weeks. The notable ones among that group are Cam Christie, a shooting guard who we talked about on that podcast. He's out of suburban Chicago. He had talked about visiting Missouri, but for a while, Minnesota was sort of the presumed leader. Well, he committed to Minnesota on July 29th. So, Cam Christie, bye. Hopefully, you have a great career in the Twin Cities. Garrick Normand, a guy who visited in June, but had seen his stock really rise since then. And even as that stock was going up, it was considered a recruiting battle between Texas and Wisconsin. Well, Tom Izzo decided to just get in there and make Greg Gard's life hell and poach him. Garrick Normand committed to Michigan State. He's off the board. And then last week, Jordan Burks committed to Ole Miss. He's a guy who had Missouri in his final group, I think of like eight schools, but he'd only taken one official visit, and that was to Ole Miss, and then he announced a commitment date. So anyone can read tea leaves there. He's committed to Ole Miss. So those guys are out, and those were mostly guys, and those were the only guys that really had direct connections, you know, in some form is that they had either visited or said they wanted to visit or, you know, had Missouri in their final group. Meanwhile, last Friday, Parker Fredrickson, who you just said, cut his list out. Mizzou didn't make it. I think the list was kind of surprising. It was Northwestern, Davidson, Notre Dame, and Rice. Throughout the spring, it looked like it would hit like Creighton, Missouri, and I can't remember who else were going to be in that group. They were not. Northwestern and Notre Dame were especially late getting in the picture. I think they had only gotten in since the start of July. I get why maybe there wasn't quite the push there. Fredrickson's great shooter. I think, you know, as we talked about it at length in the last pod, I think shooting is a commodity you can never have too much of, but a lot of questions about where he would fit, you know, physically on the defensive end of the floor. You know, could he really be a combo guard and a creator? You know, so he's a stark contrast with Chris Parker, where you have all the physical tools in the world, and you're going to hope to, you know, polish that up and sort of chisel that out. You know, with Park Fredrickson, you're hoping you can put weight on him enough to where he's going to hold up defensively. There was also Jazz Gardner, a big out in California who put Missouri on his list of teams that are in the mix, but he's only taken one official visit, and that was to Dayton. He's lined up another one to Texas Tech, but it's been quiet on whether or not he'll make it to Columbia. So until
he's
that
a top 100 kid with like a really odd.
Yeah, it was funky. There's like UCSB. St. Mary's was UCSB, St. Mary's, Pepperdine, like local schools. I mean, if you're a SoCal kid, I mean, those make sense for like UCSB and Pepperdine. They're in his backyard, and USC's on there, but it seems like a weird sort of fit there. And also just given the relationship that CY has with Jordan Butler and the time there, it just seems like if there's anything that's more likely to produce something, I would think it would be with Butler than with Gardner, but he's still floating out there. So that's a lot of names. It's a lot of information, but realistically what you need to probably take away from this is there are three names to focus on. We talked about two of them a minute ago, Jordan Butler, Chris Parker, and the third, East St. Louis, wing forward hybrid Michaela Bridge.
He's a forward. Yeah, like I would probably list him as a post. Look, he's a guy that I still like guys that are tough and physical. I'm not sure he's a guy that plays much on the wing. You know,
he's tried a little bit with. I watched a lot of him this weekend, way too much of him this weekend. With Ramey Jesse, kind of plays more on the wing. He'll initiate some sets. You know, the handle has improved markedly, dramatically better than what we saw over the winter with East St. Louis. Much better. But
not just slapping at the ball and hope it comes back up to him.
It's under control. And like, he's got three moves that he wants to use off the bounce. And the thing is, he's just so physically imposing. And the teams that, no offense to Ramey Jets was not seeing the same kind of teams that you would see on a shoe circuit where, you know, two dribbles with his right, spin off the defender, and then just hope that that undersized help defender can maybe get in the way as he goes to the rim. But the handle's improved a little bit. The bigger deal is he looks comfortable defending on the perimeter. That was, you know, offense is whatever, you know, you and I have said it ad nauseum. Who are you guarding at the next level? The guy was guarding ones, twos, and threes. Was it the same kind of caliber as ones that we see on shoe circuits? Maybe not, but you were seeing him at least in those positions and having to take on that role. So I'm not going to completely say he's typecast into just being an undersized bully ball four. But I think that's probably the most natural spot you could plug him in right now but his recruitment's interesting as to how that's going to play out.
Well, yeah, he was. So the last staff was on him. Actually, had him on the
early
visit with Christian Jones when Jones ended up committing. And it really looked like that was one of those things that was just it was going to happen at some point.
East St. Louis kid, tough as hell, wants to rebound, wants to defend, physically ready to walk in.
Martin.
It was like, slightly undersized. It was like it was like somebody created a math formula for a player, and that was or an engineer, a set of engineering blueprints, and they came up with McCaleb Rich, and it was just a matter, I think, of when, not if, Missouri was going to get in, but. Yeah,
but the new staff has gotten involved. They did reoffer him. I think the thing is we're trying to figure out when he's going to be able to make it onto campus for a visit, because so his top seven was Mizzou, K-State, Ole Miss, VCU, SLU, UIC, Eastern Michigan. He did cut SLU.
Yeah,
and kept UIC and Eastern Michigan along with Ole Miss, Kansas State, Mizzou. K-State does seem like they're making some noise there.
Ole Miss trying to get into it a little bit, it seems like. But the bigger deal is he has visits set to UIC, Ole Miss, Kansas State, and I believe there is one to Eastern Michigan. I can't recall or not. But
UIC
there is not
in the
one
Valley now. Is that right?
Yeah, UIC's in the Valley now. Christian Jones plays at the Valley. I think there's a staffer with Yaklich up there who's
still,
got
he's
I think he hired someone with some Metro East connections, so it makes sense once you have that sort of background as to why UIC might be in the mix a little bit. But he does not have a visit date set to Missouri, and normally in the fall we always sort of say look at the football schedule and that's your OV weekends for basketball. Well, he's committed to go visit other schools on all the dates in September when Mizzou has home football games.
Yeah.
He will be at Kansas State the day they play Missouri in football. So I can't wait for that faux recruiting narrative to take hold that watching Kansas State potentially beat Missouri in a sport that Rich does not play is what swayed him. I can't wait for that narrative to get trotted out potentially.
Yeah, I was thinking about going to Missouri, but then I went to watch this other team play Missouri in a sport that I don't play, and Missouri lost, and
I was so ashamed. I couldn't do it.
I couldn't pull the trigger. It's just impossible at that point to consider a school because their football team lost.
Drink, letting Missouri down in basketball recruiting. In the Metro East of all places. Oh, Luther Burden, what did we get for landing you?
Yeah.
Point being, I think this is the consensus seems to be this is a race between Missouri and Kansas State. But again, if he's not visiting you and he's visiting somebody else, where does he sort of sit on the board there? Now, this is a theme with all these guys, Rich, Parker, Butler. We're waiting to see dates for when guys may get in. But it feels like if you were to just look at the board right now, I would think you'd want to take a big in this class. So to me, Butler feels like a guy you would want regardless. And then it's really, what is the staff sort of value or want, with that sort of 2-3-4 position, is do they want to take a guy like Parker who, has both of these guys, both Chris and McCaleb have insane physical gifts. They're just different. So I think to me, it's a fun sort of litmus test as to what the staff is going to value in those spots. If all else is equal and you could, and Rich and Parker both want to come to Columbia, which one do you take? I can't speak to what their thought process is, but it's certainly just interesting to think about what choice they would make if it came down to that, Parker or Rich for presumably a final spot in the class if it unfolded that way.
Well, I mean, it would seem to me that, the likelihood it was probably come down more to like Butler or Rich. And I think clearly, like, if that's the choice, you're clearly going to take Butler.
Yeah.
You know, my thought process, and clearly, like, you think differently, I think differently, and Dennis Gates does as well. Like, we all don't want the same things the exact same way. You know, we try to pick up and determine the type of things that we think Dennis Gates would prefer. But, I mean, I think most coaches are going to want, you know, unless you're maybe Konzo Martin, you're going to want two reliable ball handlers on the floor. You're going to want two long-rangey wings who hopefully can shoot it consistently. And then you want somebody who can protect the rim. You know, and we were kind of talking on the Slack a little bit as I was, you know, updating a lot of the stuff on Arkansas and kind of looking at Arkansas's roster. And, you know, Muss went out and recruited all kinds of transfers to fill into those post positions. And the reality is like, I think it's probably going to be a very guard heavy lineup. He's going to have, you know, two, three guys who can handle the ball. And I think, you know, our guy, Trevin Brazile, is going to play a lot of minutes at the five, just like he did at Missouri. And that's helpful because he provides you rim protection.
But can space out on offense and let you play.
Yeah. Yeah. He's comfortable moving in and around the perimeter. So, and I think when you look at like Trent Pierce, you know, like there's rumors that he's, you know, still kind of growing. He's 6'9". Maybe he can get to 6'10". And if you have a 6'10", like, four man, and like Aiden Shaw's on the wing and he's 6'8", like, that's a lot of rim protection on defense. So, I mean, you don't necessarily need a 7-foot center. You could get away with, I mean, like, somebody like Kobe Brown playing the five, somebody like Noah Carter playing the five, somebody like Mikayla Bridge playing the five.
I'm working on a scouting, you know, sort of profile of Trent. And, you know, he told me they pitched him basically on being kind of a hybrid four guy who may guard the post and switches. So his job will be to play with length, you know, not jostle, but if he gets switched, like if it's a pin down and he gets switched onto a guy, wall up, use position, use his length, and just, you know, make that, you know, finishing angle tough. But he's a kid, like, if you watch, you know, when we talked about Trent after he committed, legitimately can play out on the perimeter defensively. But he's a guy that I think, as you just sort of alluded to, there's flexibility there, where if normally, you know, coaches worry about a big little switch situation, well, you don't have to with Trent. There's size there. And as he puts on some, you know, strength, he can at least maybe hold a little bit of position there, you know, off a first move or a guy trying to put a first shoulder into him. So there's some flexibility there. I think, you know, Parker's a guy who, you know, maybe the handle and decision-making has to improve a little bit, but you put him and, you know, Anthony Robinson out front, those are two hyper-athletic guys who can apply real heavy ball pressure, and that helps you on post defense, because where's post defense start, coach? Where does it start?
Starts on the perimeter. Like,
it doesn't matter if the guy's got post position if you can't get the ball into him.
Like, one of most of my playing days, let me actually get this thought out. I'm a man-to-man guy. I've always been man-to-man. I don't mind coaches that play some zone. I can't stand watching Syracuse and that stupid 2-3 zone, like nothing but 2-3 zone. It's dumb. But I do think, like, if you're, you know, being able to switch defenses is fine. But if you give me a team, I want high pressure man-to-man defense. I want to put pressure on the passing lanes, and the best way to put pressure on the passing lanes, and that includes wing entries into the posts, you know, is basically like getting up under somebody and taking away their feet, taking away their, you know, their comfort. You know, very few players make sound passes, you know, when they don't have good position and angles. And so that's what you try to do as a defense is take those angles away.
So that's where I think it starts for you. Those two on the perimeter, you've got a guy like Aiden Shaw who can, you know, whether he's low, whether he's helping down, whether he's stunting, just having that sort of insurance as a rotational piece is there. Trent Pierce is really, really sound. Like, I don't think he's the same kind of athlete that Aiden is, but I think he does
think
a lot.
Very many people who are the same kind
of athlete. No, but people are going to look at them and say, oh, you got two freaks who are long sort of 3-4 guys. If you watch Trent play, I think he's more of a guy who's going to just be sound for you, and whether he's isolated on a guard or he's got to, you know, guard a spot. I think he does a lot of the things that don't wind up on highlight types, but he's a really, really good defender within that team concept. And that gives Aiden the license to go help aggressively. And then if you've got a big like Butler down there who can, you know, sort of who is maybe skinny up from the waist up, but has a good base and can jostle and, you know, sort of make it tough to get deep position, but then play with his length and wall up. And then you've got Shaw rotating. Things get tough there. And if you can have some stuff where Shaw can switch out and you know, guard post for a little bit, you've got Pierce who can do the same. There's a lot of flexibility there. So I think that, you know, having Parker, though, as a potential guy out on the perimeter gives you the length and the athleticism to keep that ball pressure steady out front and really let the guys behind do what they do best. So to me, Parker would be the pick in that sense. Now, Rich plays at a school where, you know, East St. Louis is aggressive on the ball. They will press. They'll run 2-2-1. They'll run two. They'll do run and jump press. But just the size, you know, I think he's probably 6'5". He looks proportional in terms of length, but maybe doesn't have quite the same wingspan as maybe like a Parker or a Robinson or the guys that are going to be on, you know, that we've seen at Florida State. I think he's going to play with the determination, the physicality that you want. But is it the same kind of vein as Parker? I'm not sure it's there. So that's where I think my sort of preference skews a little bit. So I know people are probably, their eyes are glazing over there, but that's sort of, I think, the trade-offs you're making at this point. All these guys have their certain upsides here. And I think that's the nice part about, you know, the names that are still out there is you can, you know, make different cases for them. But to me, Parker and Butler fit with what this team wants to do defensively. And everything I've heard from folks about Gates is, you know, don't forget that he's a defensive guy first. That's what he loved to do at Cal. That's what he loved to do when he was at Nevada, just, you know, at one of his associate HC jobs. He loved planning how to shut teams down defensively. This team, I think, fits with what he wants to do if he gets Parker and Butler. So I think those are the two. Just setting aside the composite rating, they just fit stylistically with what I think this team wants to do moving forward with him sort of in charge, or with him in charge.
So you know who Mikayla Bridge kind of reminds me a lot of?
Who?
And maybe a guy that doesn't quite have the guard skills yet, but his overall size sort of lines up, and that's Raekwon Gray.
Yeah.
If you watch a lot of Florida State, and really if you remember Florida State when they were kicking the crap out of Missouri.
Just waves like of really tough dudes stopping whatever Missouri wanted to do.
You might remember, like, Raekwon Gray was a guy who was really an unheralded recruit, a lot like Mikayla Bridge is. And he was a guy who was just so physically imposing that he could just get to his spots and be effective. So, I mean, he was listed. I just pulled up the KenPom page. I was going to see how big he was. 6'8", 260. You know, and I don't necessarily think that like he had a little bit of chub to him.
Yeah,
which I don't really see that with Rich, but Rich sort of has that same kind of physical imposing, like, I'm gonna get to my spots and that's gonna make me effective. And you're not gonna be able to stop me from getting to my spots because I'm that strong. And that's to me, like, if you're looking for a good Florida State comparison, he's a guy that I think sort of fits that mold of, you know, maybe you're used to, you know, Florida State with, like, just everybody's long and lean and, you know, look like they're marathon runners and, you know, just arms for days. And Raekwon Gray really wasn't that guy. He was just a damn good basketball player. And I could see as McCaleb kind of develops his skill sets a little bit more, kind of taking on a little bit of that role where, you know, you can still kind of pitch him the ball on the wing and have him go make a play if he's in ISO, because what's going to happen is he's going to be able to overwhelm the defender with his strength. He's already just so strong. I think he could play college basketball, you know, tomorrow.
Yeah, you could put him on camp. I saw him live, I think, in the winter. No, I saw him last June when they were playing 16U, when he was still with Brad Beal Elite, and they were up in an event in Chicago. That kid could have, barely 16, could have been on Missouri's roster. That's how physically developed he is. Looks like a college kid walking in the gym right now. So he's ready to go. But you can see why Kansas State likes him, because who did they have at Baylor these past couple of years? Mark Vidal, Mario Kegler, Mark, you know, they've got all kinds of, you know, Macy O'Teague.
Vidal's another good comp, like, you know, just athletic, kind of undersized, but
can give you that 3-4 blur.
Yeah.
6'5", 230.
Plays his ass off. Yeah.
Yeah. So you see why he appeals to, you know, Jerome Tang, is that he's got familiarity with that type of player. So I think he can work, you know, and by all accounts, you know, at least, you know, scouts with, you know, On3 and 247 have said that they expect, you know, to see Rich move into the top 150 of their rankings, which would mean he'd probably be a composite top 150 guy. You know, he's had a really, really nice spring. He had a really, really good, you know, June, a lot like Christian Jones did a year ago. Went up to some team camps in Illinois, put it together well there, had a really, really good week at Elite 32, an independent event in Georgia. And, you know, his stock has just taken off. I have to remember, you know, I've watched, you include East St. Louis games with him as a sophomore, if you include him with BBE and even in the special, I've probably watched him play 30 or 35 games. You know, I've seen the evolution in what he's done, you know, going from just a guy who all he did was dunk. Like, that's a cliche, but it's also the truth, where he's adding components. He's getting better. You know, it hasn't been like an aha moment. It hasn't been with a snap of the fingers, but there's been progress there. And, you know, you look at what Kansas State, you know, you look at what Baylor did with those kind of undersized bully ball type of guard forwards. You look at a Raekwon Gray at Florida State. These staffs have shown they can turn those guys into productive members of good teams. So if they take Rich, you know, I think you look at the background of the staff and you say, okay, you know, we've seen them do this. This is the kid they're going to try it with here. So I just think from a positional fit perspective, Parker kind of, I think, fills out the array a little bit better. But, you know, there's a case to be made that they could turn Rich into a really, really nice piece of on this roster for who's a 3-4 year guy for this team. So we'll see what they do and what's available to them over the next couple of weeks.
You want to talk 24 a little bit?
We can. I will confess I haven't gotten into the film much at all with that group. That will have to happen probably.
That's okay. Nobody cares about film, man. If it's all about where they're ranked in the recruiting rankings, that's all that matters.
Ugh, too many clipping sessions for me. So
we're already at like 40 minutes almost. So
we'll be quick to the 24s.
Because there is some movement here.
There is, and we talked about the 23 classes kind of being, you know, a preamble class. Now, if they land Butler and Parker, as we just said, and they get a top 15 group, hell, that's not a preamble. That said, then it's one of the best classes they've landed in a decade. It really ups the ante in 24. And if you look at, you know, what Missouri's done, they've probably offered 20 of the top 80 kids in the composite. They have absolutely just blown the last staff out of the water in terms of offers. You know, it was notable of Konzo's staff was at 18 or 20 by this time in a cycle. Dennis and crew are at 40 offers already. And that's not including, you know, going out to see guys during open gyms in fall. That's not including, you know, sleepers who emerge next spring. This thing could get to 50 or 60 kids.
And then you're in like Buzz Williams territory.
You are. You are. It's just the reason why I'm hesitant to get into film here is there's just so many bodies. And so you want to see guys, you kind of want to see what the pecking order is emerging. And to piggyback off your earlier point, that's why these official visits are sort of telling, because it sort of sets out who are the priority guys at this point in the cycle. And there's some really, really good ones. Right now, they have three guys set to visit on October 1st. One is an unranked kid out of Harriman, Tennessee, runs with Brad Beal, elite 6'7", 190 forward, Jordan McCollum. I would imagine, you know, when the rankings expand this fall, he'll be a guy that moves into the top 150. He's set to visit on October 1st. One that is going to be really, really interesting is Dallas Thomas, a 6'7", 170 forward, string bean of a kid out of Little Rock, Arkansas, plays at Parkview there. Go Patriots. Runs with Brad Beal, elite. He is a consensus, probably top 50 prospect, top 40 prospect right now. And the rankings are just starting to like go through their first initial rounds. He's set to visit on October 1st. And then a kid that I'm really, we'll see what happens here, because Illinois is considered to be a favorite there. He said North Carolina is a dream school, but James Brown, a 6'9", 210 big man out of Chicago, Illinois, plays at St. Rita and runs with Mean Streets. He is set to visit on October 1st. So that's three guys visiting, two that are probably at least consensus top 50 guys and one that should be a top 150 player that are coming into town. And then there's the possibility that they might be able to get a kid like Ryan Jones, a top, you know, at least I'm looking here, Rivals and On Three are a little bit lower on him, but he's probably right now a consensus top 30 kid out of Gainesville, Florida, plays at the Rock School down there. He may take an official visit, or said he's interested in taking an official visit. And then Marcus Allen, a kid that the staff watched run with Florida Rebels. He's out of the Miami area. He is another top 50 level kid. He has said he is potentially interested in visiting. So that is five names, four or five that are potentially top 50 level. Oh, and I forgot Jaden Williams, another kid out of Atlanta who runs with the Atlanta Celtics, may be on the board there. So if I'm rambled through that, that is four to five top 50 kids that are looking at or will visit Missouri at this point. So they're getting to work in 24, Sam.
The board is expanded. There's also Nojus Indrusitis. I'm probably horribly mispronouncing that name.
Nojus sort of like, Indrusitis, yeah.
Yeah, top 70.
He's having a really, really nice sort of Euro camp, U17 FIBA Euro tournament with Lithuania. He's running with them. He's Lithuanian. His parents are Lithuanian. So he's having a really, really nice tournament over there right now. Can shoot the crap out of the ball.
And he's a high school teammate of James Brown.
Yep. But the Dallas Thomas recruitment is going to be interesting. They are trying to not only reach into Arkansas, where Muss has built a pretty sturdy fence right now. They are going into Parkview, which is coached by none other than Scotty Thurman of Arkansas lore. And it's just going to be crazy if they are getting into a battle with, you know, those sorts of players involved there. But hey,
yeah, and not just those sorts of players, but you know, some of the Arkansas NIL money is serious.
JB Hunt, that JB Hunt truck, baby, that JB Hunt truck, potentially making a delivery. So, but hey, if you get a kid on campus, that's progress. To be there and to sort of be there at this stage is always a positive. And I think the bigger deal here is that, you know, we're looking at, you know, people had sort of talked about this staff not doing a lot locally. Well, Jordan McCollum and Dallas Thomas are Brad Beal elite players. Are they from Missouri? No, but they run with a Missouri-based program. You know, you look at CY, you know, using his connections in Florida and his history down there in Florida with two guys, and even into Georgia with Georgia and the Atlanta area with Jaden Williams. And, you know, we had talked about, you know, was Kyle Smith-Peters going to be a guy who's going to need some time to acclimate as a recruiter? Well, he's the one who's offered McCollum. He's the one who's offered Dallas Thomas. He's the one who's offered James Brown. He's the one who watches Mean Streets when, you know, they're out on the road at live period. So I guess what you want to see happen, there are inklings that that's taking place. Will they get these guys as a guaranteed? I don't know. There's more than a year to go in their recruitments. But, you know, if these are the top 6 to 7 guys and you're already getting them on campus and they're already showing interest and they're already talking about how the great relationship they've built with the staff, that's a good indicator right now. We'll see what happens, but the next 6 to 8 weeks could be really, really nice for Missouri as far as finishing out a quality 23 class and really setting themselves up for a dynamite 2024.
And really, like, if you're Dallas Thomas, and I'm thinking that that the Brinks truck would have to be pretty huge for me to have to hang out with Eric Musselman, when in exchange I could hang out with CY, who I've kind of joked a little bit in our Slack channel. Like, I feel like Dennis Gates is kind of a little bit nerdy. Like, I feel like we would sit down with him and we would get really, really nerdy about basketball. But if you're talking about, like, who you just want to, like, hang and chill and just, like have a drink with, man, like, CY is that guy. I'm just saying Eric Musselman is not that guy. He's certainly proving himself as a coach. Yeah, those Brinks trucks are helping. Let's see if we can work some magic and pull somebody out of Arkansas. I will be shocked because, you know, and I'll always kind of go back to one of the
kids only leave Arkansas to go to Kentucky.
Right. And I think one of the advantages that that Arkansas has is Arkansas kids grow up like rooting for Arkansas. That doesn't happen in Missouri as much. Like, maybe Central Missouri.
Arkansas is the inverse of what Missouri is. Like, there is no show me mentality there at times.
Right. I mean, there's no professional teams in Arkansas, so like you're stuck. Not necessarily the NBA, but for a lot of years there were two NFL teams in Missouri, and so like that was a thing. Is that you develop those, you know, those passions, and that's a lot tougher to kind of overcome, and then Missouri kind of being, up and down and on the football side, it makes it more difficult to sort of state your claim as like the state school for that sport. I think it's been a challenge to kind of get Missouri kids, and Kansas City kids to be like, you know, if you're growing up in Kansas City, even if you're on the Missouri side, I mean, it's Kansas everywhere. So,
yeah,
like that's the fight they have where, you know, Arkansas, and you're right. Like, if elite kids that have an option to, you know, maybe go to like Kentucky or to go to Duke or something like that, you know, they're going to listen to those schools, but Missouri is not that. So it'll be interesting to kind of see, like, you know, Dallas Thomas is kind of that kid that, not quite five-star kid, but like top 50 kid right now. Arkansas has had a lot of success landing those kind of dudes. Who was the kid that went to Florida?
Kevon Allen.
And even he, like, he was ready to go to Arkansas, but he wasn't going to commit to Arkansas because they took another guard.
Yeah, I can't remember who they took, but
I'm trying to remember who it was.
I can remember that cycle. I think it was it may have been a Parkview kid. It may have been Anton Beard, maybe. I think that's
I think it was Beard. Yeah. I think you're right.
And Anton Beard, Parkview kid. Like, Parkview is like, if I'll disclose, I worked for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, covered preps there, covered UALR, covered Arkansas State. Man, the influence of Nolan in that city, at like Hall and at Parkview, is deep. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's, you know, a guy like IJ Reddy, and there's some other guys who are like just outside, like basically I think you have to be outside the top 80 or outside the top 100. And sometimes those kids will get out because Arkansas will take a kid that's higher rated at their position. But I mean, I can name the kids that have been highly rated out of Arkansas that have left in the last decade. Monk, Allen, Goodwin, Ware. And two of those guys went to Kentucky, one went to Florida, and Ware went to Oregon, which Nike, NIL money, all that kind of stuff as well. So that's it. Like, last fall, they thought Nick Smith was going to go to Alabama. That's what it looked like. They got him on campus. They pushed. There was that state behind it. He said he committed. He could feel the energy of that entire state pushing him to stay home. And that's not overstated. Those folks, you know, are about it, and they believe in, you know, that every kid that grows up in Arkansas should stay home. And they will, and it's not quite a blood feud when a kid leaves, but it's hard. And, you know, if Dallas Thomas is a guy that is of that caliber, where he's going to be a top 30, top 40 guy, he plays in a way that kind of fits with what Muss wants to do. His coach is a guy who won a national title at Arkansas. It's just hard. It's just, and, you know, he's at a place, you know, that has sent guys to Fayetteville consistently. It's just, it's an uphill sled, but you got to start somewhere, and they're going to try and get that opportunity to put themselves in the mix on October 1. So again, we'll see what happens, but man, Thomas is just sort of a fun battle to watch happen. If you know sort of the history of what life is like in Arkansas and what sort of the culture is like down there, but we'll see if you know, this staff can pry him out.
Well, I think we should probably wrap that up. You know me, I like to keep it under an hour. So that's a lot of recruiting talk. And as things sort of progress over the next probably couple weeks, hopefully, like, we'll get some more news knock loose, and then we'll be back in a couple weeks. We can kind of talk about a lot of that. Is there anything else that you wanted to hit on before we get out of here?
No, just that, you know, if some of these recruitments don't go the way they want, people may talk about backup plans. And just a reminder, I told Sam this before we went on air. There are basically 40 guys in the composite who have not committed or cut their lists yet. You know, there's, and Missouri has offers out to about 5 or 6 of them, but realistically it's Butler and Parker. You know, it's hard. It's almost impossible, nigh impossible, to get in and really pivot at this kind of late stage in the game. So this is what the board looks like, you know, right now. There are 3 JUCO guys they offered in June, but those guys are all going to be going to their second year to JUCO. You know, those feel like guys you would take in the spring if they have good years. So this is what the board is right now. If you're asking what plan B and plan C is at this point, guys are coming off at this juncture.
Transfer portal is
that's the new, that's it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've given you all the names we've got at this point in 23.
And see who gets fired, like maintaining relationships. See who gets fired.
Like recruiting kids so you can get them in the portal.
Yep.
That's all I got.
Well, all right. So again, we'll take a couple weeks off, and we'll come back and do this all again. Make sure that you're subscribed so you get that podcast when it is ready to go, right down in Apple Podcasts or Google Play Store, wherever you listen to your podcast. I believe we're also on Spotify these days. You'll also get those fantastic episodes of Before the Box Score, which are beaming directly to your mobile device. Matt, these days, once a week, you get the dulcet tones of Nate G. Edwards and Brandon BK Kiley right to your phone. Head over to the flagship rockhamnation.com. You'll read everything that Matt writes about, everything that I write about. and much, much more as we gear up for this this football season. Football's about to start happening. How about that? Make sure you also do the Twitter thing. Like I said earlier, follow Matt at MattJHarris85. You can follow me at Sam T. Snelling. And so until next time, 2 weeks, episode 2, we'll be here. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.